So, how we always begin any meditation practice session, or any other teaching for that matter, in the Theravada Buddhist tradition that I am part of, is we do what's called taking refuge. And taking refuge is very traditional. So like this tradition goes back 2,600 years to the time of the Buddha. And what we do is we take refuge in three things. We take refuge in the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. So the Buddha is both that historical figure 2,600 years ago who taught for 40 years after he became enlightened. And also, for me, since, I don't have a personal religion, I didn't grow up in a Buddhist household or anything like that. Some of you may have. It's more like here's this idea that the Buddha said that we all have Buddha nature. We're all like Buddhas in the making, right? And if that's the case, then when I take refuge in the Buddha, I'm taking refuge in the possibility that I can become more Buddha-like by doing this practice, which I find a very encouraging thought. And the Dhamma, second thing we take refuge in is the Dhamma, which is basically the teachings of the Buddha. After he became enlightened, he taught for 40 years. So this is a huge volume of astounding teachings. I'd like to think of the whole of the Dhamma as like a roadmap, and if you go on a road, you can sort of take this route here, which is sort of the back country. You can take the express route. You can be on the express for a while and then go over to this sort of side road. You can have little places where you stop along the way, and everybody's different. Everybody finds their own route. So the Buddhist teachings are really vast, but they all have the same intent, which is to help us go become better people, essentially. That sums it up, I think. And then the Sangha is the people you're practicing with right now. We're right as we are sitting here connected together in this magic electronic way, we are basically co-creating a Sangha, a group of practitioners that we practice with. And the thing about Sangha is it's a really powerful force. It means that we're all connected together and we're taking refuge together. And refuge means basically someplace safe. This is what a refuge, if you look at the English translation of refuge, it's someplace safe, someplace where we go mentally, emotionally, spiritually, however you want to think of it, that we can create by chanting this chant that allows us to connect together, to create this safe space, so that I know, and you all know, that when we're having discussions and things later, or just when you're practicing right now, for that matter, or listening right now, that you're safe. That you don't have to worry about anything. You don't have to think like, oh, someone's going to think I'm really weird doing this Buddhist stuff, or all those emotional energies that we sometimes get caught in. Don't have to be there at all. Because everybody's doing the same thing. We're all here doing this together and creating, co-creating this safe space where we can all open our hearts and minds to the teachings of the Buddha and the practice of the Buddha. So that's the intent of taking refuge. And so what we do is we chant, and I'm just going to chant this out loud. If you're curious and you don't know this chant, just let me know. You can email me, and I can actually send you a copy of the chant, or however you want to do this. I'm not too adept in like putting up extra things on the screen. I haven't figured a lot of that out yet when it comes to Zoom. So, but I'm happy to send you an email with this stuff on it if you're curious. I know many of you know the chant, and some of you might be familiar with it. So let's just chant the refuges together. Buddham saranam gacchami, Dhammam saranam gacchami, Sangham saranam gacchami, Dutyampi Buddham saranam gacchami, Dutyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami, Dutyampi Sangham saranam gacchami, Tatyampi Buddham saranam gacchami, Tatyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami, Tatyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. So we've now created this space where we can sit. So what I'd like to do now is just like sit for about 5 minutes. Just, well, I'll sit in silence. I'll turn off my mic. And what I want you to do, especially if this is new to you, you've never done any formal sitting practice before, or maybe you have, but you're sort of, well, let's just pretend I'm a beginner, is just really pay attention to your posture so that you know your body is erect, upright. You feel grounded and solid, like you're sitting. If you're sitting in a chair, your feet are flat on the floor. If you're sitting cross-legged, that your knees are down towards the floor. And you can just be still. A lot of this practice has to do with being in silence and sitting still. Because the silence and the stillness makes the mind tend to be quieter and calmer, which is one of the side benefits of this practice. So let's just sit. I'm going to turn off my mic, and I'm going to turn off the recording, and we'll just sit for 5 minutes, and then I'll turn my mic back on, and I'll ring the bell, and that'll be the end of that sitting period. And then I'll actually start teaching the actual practice. So, as I mentioned already, everything I'm teaching in this 9-week course comes pretty directly from the Satipatthana Sutta. Sati means basically mindfulness, is the normal translation, that we'll talk about other translations as well. Patthana is wisdom. So this is the mindfulness wisdom teachings. And actually, every week I'll read little bits of this to you. And I want to start by reading essentially the Buddha's introduction, because it makes it very clear why we're doing this in some sense. And this is the language of the sutta is very traditional. Monks, that's us, okay? We can all pretend we're monks, or I suppose bhikkhus and bhikkhunis in the Pali. This is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the surmounting of sorrow and lamentation, for the disappearance of dukkha. Dukkha being translated as something like suffering, or there's lots of other words. Being unhappy, not getting what you know, not feeling solid, lots of different words you can use. For the disappearance of dukkha and discontent, for the acquiring of the true method, for the realization of nibbana, in other words, enlightenment. So he's right at the very beginning, he's saying, you know, this isn't just about feeling good. This isn't about learning how to relax more. These are all side benefits of meditation practice for sure. But this is about purification, purifying ourselves and heading towards enlightenment. And I know some people, the word purify and purification might make you sort of shift in your seat and feel a little uncomfortable. But it's not like we're judging ourselves or anything. We're just saying our mind is not particularly always very pure. It wanders, it gets caught in all kinds of unwholesome thoughts and stories and rants. And so the purification is gradually changing our mental habits to be more in line with wholesomeness. That's the way you could describe purification, I suppose. So, what about the word mindfulness? Mindfulness is one of those words you can see it, there's mindfulness coaches for football teams now. So there's lots of, ideas of what mindfulness is, right? And there's a couple of ideas that we might want to look at. One is staying connected to what's happening right now, staying connected to what's arising in the moment. That's one definition you'll often see of mindfulness, learning how to stay connected to what's arising in the moment. Another definition you'll sometimes see is seeing things clearly. Because often we don't see things clearly. What we're seeing is filtered through all kinds of mental habits. All of these things we'll talk about as the course goes on. But mindfulness, like every other meditation practice, and this is this, so this, what I'm teaching you is just one form of mindfulness, and it's one form of meditation practice. So it's like a subset of a subset of all. There's lots of different ways to meditate. In no sense am I saying this is the only way or the correct way or the best way. This is just the way I practice and have been practicing for a long time, and I know, and I feel comfortable with, so therefore I can teach it. I can't teach you things I don't know, or I'm not familiar with, or I don't practice. And so, in the Satipatthana Sutta, there's a variety of what we'll call meditation objects. And all meditative forms have such a thing. It could be, a mantra, it could be a visualization, there's all kinds of different forms. Some sort of physical process that you observe. In the Satipatthana Sutta, where the Buddha starts with is the breath. Let's just pay attention to what's happening as we breathe. Just that. It's like, and the beauty of this particular meditation object, which is where we always begin, is that we're always breathing. Don't need anything special. We don't need any special equipment. We just have to keep breathing, which I hope you all do. If you stop breathing for a long time, I'll hopefully not be able to deal with that. But actually, I have a friend who teaches who actually had, well, during one of his retreats, someone was sitting and passed away while they were sitting, had a massive stroke, and stopped breathing right in the meditation hall. He and I talked about it. It was quite a good way to go, actually. If you're going to go, you may as well go sitting in the meditation hall. Anyhow, but other than that, we're all going to keep breathing. And so the breath is this very convenient meditation object. And what we're going to do is a form of how to pay attention to the breath that's called noting. And noting essentially very soft wording that we use to stay more firmly tethered to the breath. If we're going to pay attention to the breath, if we're going to try and have the breath be what we're paying attention to the exclusion of anything else, noting is a way to tighten that connection, to tether us more tightly to the breath. This is what the Buddha has to say about meditating on the breath. And how, monks, does he in regard to the body abide contemplating the body? Here, gone to the forest or the root of a tree or to an empty hut, he sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, sets his body erect, and established mindfulness in front of him. Mindful he breathes in, mindful he breathes out. So the modern version of this would be, or he's in a Zoom meeting with a bunch of other people. Equally good place to practice. You don't have to go to a forest hut. Go into Zoom land instead. Then he goes on. Breathing in, he knows I breathe in. Well, breathing in long, he knows I breathe in long. Breathing out long, he knows I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he knows I breathe in short. Breathing out short, he knows I breathe out short. He trains thus. I shall breathe in, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus. I shall breathe out, experiencing the whole body. He trains thus. I shall breathe in, calming the bodily formation. He trains thus. I will breathe out, calming the bodily formation. So that's a lot of instruction, actually. And the idea here is, first off, the noting, the sort of layers to noting. So the first and simplest layer is simply, as you're inhaling, you note, you silently say to yourself, in sort of in the background of your mind, in. Because I'm trying to pay attention to what's happening right now. Right now I'm breathing in. So I use the note in. And then, of course, that inhale ends and I breathe out. And then I note out. But it could, in, out might also be inhale, exhale. It might be rising, falling. Because, you know, the inhalation tends to be sort of uplifting and the exhalation is like going back down. And some people like that, those notes, because they're sort of descriptive of what's actually physically going on in the body at the time, what you can actually sense, that rising, falling. Everybody finds what the words that suit them. And I'm not saying these are all the right ones. I mean, maybe your first language is something other than English and you want to do this in, you know, Polish or something. That's fine. Or you know, you find another set of words that describe to you the process of inhaling and exhaling. And those are the notes you use. So the whole practice, in one sense, is just simply you sit comfortably, focused, and then when an inhale starts, you note the start of that inhale. And then you stay with that breath until it ends, and then you notice that you're exhaling, so you note out. And then in again, and then out. But actually, of course, what's really going to happen, and this is, now we're going to get to the truth, is it's going to be like in, out, in. Oh, I shouldn't have had that spicy food for dinner. My stomach is, you know, something, the mind's going to go someplace else other than paying attention to the breath. This is the nature of mind. Mind is easily distracted. It's distractible. Okay, and so now what happens? So I'm in, out, in. Oh, I shouldn't have eaten that spicy food. Maybe, then you go through couple of minutes of sort of deciding what you're going to have for dinner tomorrow, and or what you had that great meal you had yesterday, you know, memory, future plans, all kinds of stuff arise. But then at some point you go, I'm sitting meditating. That's what I started out to do anyway. And then you just note what's happening now, which is I'm thinking. So you know, thinking, and then you just go back to the breath. For now, later on we'll add more layers to this, but for now, just literally, you note the inhale, exhale. When you're distracted, you and you notice that you're distracted, then you note what's happening now. I'm thinking, and then you just consciously choose to go back and pay attention to the breath. You just start again. And really, all of meditation practice, no matter what form, no matter what tradition, it's all the same in this way, is that all we can ever do is just keep starting again and again and again and again. You know, I've been practicing 47, 48 years now almost. All I keep doing for all those years is just I keep starting again, because that's all you can do. Yeah. And so it's not like when the mind wanders and you notice that you're thinking, you've done something wrong. Really important you understand this. There's nothing, you haven't done something wrong, you're not a failure, you're not getting it. You're just having a normal mind doing what a normal mind does, which is wander. And all we're trying to do is over time wander less. Just less. That's the you know, a famous teacher said, if you're practicing and when you start your mind wanders 20 times every minute, and after a year of diligent practice it only wanders 19 times every minute, you've made great progress. This is a long-term practice, long-term process. It's not like there's no instant noodles version of meditation. This is like takes time. So and you have to be okay with that. You have to be okay with the fact that sometimes you're going to sit and your mind is going to be very precise, and you can maybe, you know, just note 10 breaths in a row sometimes, maybe 20. And another time, you know, between the in and the out, you're going to space out and be gone, and just because that's the nature of your mind at that moment. It's okay. Another thing that I want to mention before I go on is that that moment when your mind has been wandering, and then you that sort of oh moment happens, you're remembering what you're doing. Another translation of sati, which I said is translated as mindfulness, another translation is simply remembering. All we're ever doing with this practice is continually remembering that we're practicing, that we're trying to stay in the present moment, that we're trying to stay focused. And the fact that the mind wandered, well, that's what minds do. Then the fact that you remembered and you saw it is actually very skillful. Because most of the time our mind just wanders from one thing to the next for hours on end. We get up and our mind is wandering, and we go to sleep, our mind is still wandering. And all we're trying to do is learn to not have it wander so much, to be able to rein it in a little bit. Also, this is really important. We're not trying to stop thinking. One great misconception about mindfulness and meditation in general, that somehow we're trying to stop thinking. The only time you stop thinking is when you die. We're not trying to do that. Okay? So just over time we learn to work skillfully with what we're thinking. For now, we just want to notice that we're thinking. That's a big step. Just noticing it, remembering, and going back to the breath. There are a couple of other things that you can do that help you sort of give you a little broader scope than just the, you know, this in out wording. You notice in the sutta the Buddha talked about, you know, when you're breathing in long, you know it's long. When you're breathing in short, you know it's short, etc. Well, sometimes a particular breath, and as you start to pay attention, but you'll notice this, has a certain flavor, almost a certain vibe, a certain, it stands out for some reason. And if there's a word that arises in the mind, it sort of describes it like long, short, deep, shallow, bumpy, there's lots of different words you might use to describe a particular inhale or exhale, then use that word instead of in or out. Because that, remember, we're trying to tether ourselves to the breath. We're trying to stay more tightly connected. In and out is kind of a little almost abstract, whereas long or deep or bumpy or whatever is a little more precisely descriptive of what's happening. And that helps you stay a little more connected. So at the same time, don't go looking for these words. Don't go, you're inhaling new. Now, is this long or is it just short? Maybe no, because now you're just thinking about the fact that you're breathing. You don't want to go there. You don't want to try. Don't try and figure out what word to use. But as you learn, as you practice over time, you'll develop a noting vocabulary of your breath style, in a sense. And you'll find places where these words just seem naturally to occur as you're practicing. Another thing you can do, and I found for me this has been very useful, is to have what's called a touch point. Some place in the body where the physical sensation of an inhalation or an exhalation is most noticeable. So traditionally the three places they suggest are down in the belly, like you can feel, as you're inhaling, your belly sort of expanding and lifting. The heart center, because this is where it sort of lifts and spreads as you inhale. Or if you like subtlety, you can sort of pay attention to the feeling of the breath as it goes across your upper lip. Too subtle for me, to be honest with you. I've messed with that a little bit, and it's like, oh God. I got so distracted trying to see what was happening to my lip. I got distracted, literally. And so for me, I'm a heart-centered kind of guy, maybe. So this is my touch point, both with both the inhale and the exhale. Some people have one touch point for inhale and a different one for exhale because they feel it in different ways. This is what I'm pointing to here, is it's good to experiment and find what works for you. For some people, this whole idea of a touch point, it's like a distraction. No, I just want to pay it and just want to just note the breath. For other people, it's like, including me, it's like, oh yeah, this is a way to sort of have a sort of a second layer of something that connects me to the what's going on, to staying in the present moment with the breath. One other thing you can try, and that's what's called aiming and sustaining. These are the first two steps of concentration. So aiming, in terms of the breath, means, can I notice that moment when that inhale or that exhale starts? Nothing happening, then the inhale starts. Can I see that? Can I tune into, can I be precise enough that I'll see the actual moment of the beginning? And then, can I sustain, which means that can I then stay with what's happening as I inhale or exhale? Because once you start really paying attention, you start to see that it's not just in out. It's like, is this happening, and then those muscles move, and then that happens, and then there's like an amazing amount of tactile sensation just in a breath. And so you can start tuning in that way more precisely to each inhale and exhale, which once again just tethers you more tightly to what's actually happening. So all these things I'm suggesting, like the touch point and aiming and sustaining and different words, these are all just what are called skillful means. They're like, let's try this out and see what happens. And everybody finds the ones that work for them. And also at different times in your practice, you might find something that you originally said, that doesn't work. You, all of a sudden, oh, look at that, that worked really great today. And so it depends on your mood and where you are in your practice and all kinds of other things. So you can find what works for you amongst all of this smorgasbord of things I've laid out. The main thing is to note the in and the out. And when the mind wanders, to note thinking and just consciously choose to come right back to the breath. That's the practice form. These skillful means are also, in some senses, a way to make this a little more interesting. Let's be honest. Like this in, out can get kind of wearing after a while. But if you have these other things going on too, it gives you a little bit more to settle the mind on. But they're all very directly connected to the fact that you're breathing. So it's one of those things where we can balance and choose. I'm trying to think of this. I think that's, yes. It's really important, I'm coming back to this, that you don't judge yourself. Especially if you've never practiced before, or maybe you've been practicing for a while, and then you have tonight your mind is not going to be able to settle on the breath for more than two breaths in a row. That happens all the time. So you have to be careful that you don't expect anything to happen. Don't expect yourself to be a great breather. And you don't judge yourself if tonight or today or the first time or the next time or whatever, you struggle and have trouble to string two breaths together before the mind wanders. Don't judge yourself ever. Judgment is just a way to very skillfully, very spiritually, because I'm meditating, I see it, I can judge myself. I'm very, you know, it becomes like holy judgment, right? Actually, it's just a way to distract yourself again from the actual breath itself. So don't just try really hard not to judge what you're doing as good or bad, or better than last time, or worse than last time, or any of those other ways we judge ourselves. Just let yourself breathe, pay attention, and keep coming back to the breath. Keep starting over, which is all really all we can ever do. It's just start over and start over and start over. So, that's all the instruction I have for tonight. What I want to do now is I want us to sit for 30 minutes. Actually, just take these instructions, and even if you've been practicing in a much more complex way, I would really like you just tonight to work with the breath. Just the breath and nothing else. Don't let any other things you know how to do be there. Just focus on the breath and really tune into the breath part of the practice. And then as we go on, we'll add in many more meditation objects. Don't worry. So we're going to sit for 30 minutes, which means I'm going to once again turn off the recording. And then if you're listening to this recording, of course, you're going to then sit for 30 minutes and then turn the recording back on, because there'll be a few more things I might say. And then we'll have some time for discussion, etc. at the end. I actually have some questions I want to ask you as well. So let's sit up straight. Remember, we want to be erect, alert, focused, comfortable. So comfortable is actually quite important. We want to be able to sit and be comfortable at the same time as we're awake and alert and focused. But we also don't want to be rigid. We don't want to like force ourselves into some fierce, solid, I'm not going to budge an inch, and I'm going to, you know, like now we got a lot of tension in the body, it's going to be very distracting. So it's somewhere in that space between upright, erect, solid, grounded, and relaxed. Somewhere at all of that at the same time. So let's now just sit for half an hour.
Can't hear you.
Barry, you're muted.
Okay, now you can hear me. Thank you. It's all this on and off business. I have to get used to it. What I was saying is that I have time now for us to sort of share what's going on, and I have a series of questions that I want to put to you as a way to sort of start this discussion, perhaps. Here's four questions. How was it? Nice, broad, open question. You can say anything you want, right? Could you stay on the breath? What was it like to, could you actually stay in the breath? What was that like? What happened when you couldn't stay on the breath? Interesting. And did you enjoy what we were doing? Why or why not? So here, there's four things you could maybe talk about. And how we'd like to do this, this is a small enough group that if you turn on your mic, I'll see you turn on your mic, and you can just start talking. And then if two people turn on the mic at the same time, I will arbitrarily pick one and then the other. And last, and this is really important, don't feel at all obliged to say anything. And don't feel like you need to speak. I do want to say, however, that especially for people who don't know me that well, it's really helpful for me to get to know you a little bit and know your practice by having you speak in this way. Talk to me. Let me know what's going on. But once again, don't feel obliged. And then we'll eventually run out of things to say, or people run out of things they want to talk about. You can also, this is also a time you can slip in a question if you have questions about what I've said and the practice and the form. That's a fine thing to do as well. So now I'm going to stop talking and let you talk. Don't all speak at once, of course.
Hi there.
Hi, Lisa.
Hey. You know, it was really helpful for me to focus on like the feeling, like what you mentioned about the touch point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I could just feel it. Feel my breath coming up and then going down, and that was something that I could really focus on, and that seemed to really help me. And I would have some little thoughts come in and out, but then I could, since it was in my body, I could feel it. It seemed like it was more solid or something in my breath.
Yeah, but, than just in your head. Yeah.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Oh well, I'm glad to hear that skillful means work, and. And like I say, may work great for you, and other people are going, oh God, I tried that and it made me crazy. And other people hate something like that. I know I have friends who are like, oh, I tried that and it was just so distracting I couldn't sort of. Everybody's different, but I'm glad it worked for you. It makes me happy to know it actually worked. So.
It helped. It worked at least this evening.
Yeah, well, and that's very wise to say, yeah, it worked now. Who knows what will happen next time I sit? Tomorrow or whatever, yeah. Okay. Other thoughts, questions, comments?
Yeah, I also was, well, not paying it. Well, I was paying attention to my breath. I was counting my breath. So I ended up just counting the breaths. One full breath in and out was one.
Yeah.
And, and I would say we'll just stay with that this evening.
Yeah, that's another skillful means, actually. Another that I didn't make the whole list, but since you brought that up, this is a good, it's a really interesting way to sort of, If you like to focus on the concentration aspect of this practice a bit more, you can count the breath. And the way I was taught is you count backwards from 10. So you start at 10, then 9, so you get all the way down to 1. And then if you get all the way down to 1 without the mind wandering away, then you start again. at 10 and down. And the reason it's back count backwards is it's not, unless you're a rocket scientist or something, it's not something you normally do, right? So it makes you pay attention a bit more. And 10 is a good number because it's long enough that you have to really sort of keep remembering. Because what happens is you're going, you're 10, 9, 8, and then the mind wanders a bit and you go, oh, was that 6 or 5? And at that point, you go, oops, back and start again. But then, there are ways you can go, once you can go through the whole thing once and start again to from 10 down to 1 again. You can start counting how many times you get through the things of, there's layers and layers. It's for the people who really like to concentrate. But it's actually quite useful sometimes when I sit and my mind is kind of scattered. I'll count, and it'll help me focus and concentrate. Like everything else, you use it when it makes sense and when it works for you. Thank you, Paul.
Yes, very.
Other comments, questions, thoughts?
I found it helpful to visualize. I don't know if that was a distraction or not, but I kind of imagined a yin yang symbol, and that when I was breathing in, well, my dog's jumping on me, Pepper, down. When I was breathing in, it was filling up the wide part of, one of the symbols.
Yeah.
And then when I was breathing out, it was filling up in the, the circular pattern. So I saw my breathing as a circular thing, rather than like a clear inhale and exhale. And so just visualizing that helped me to think about my breath.
Sounds great, Maria. I mean, the thing about skillful means is we find out what works for us, and if seeing a simple thing like a yin yang in your mind, as opposed to paying attention to the physical touch point or something, and imagining it filling and emptying, sounds great to me. Good for you.
Okay. Thanks.
Other thoughts, questions, comments?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I do have a history of having some breathlessness. And so tonight, when I started to meditate, I mean, I paid attention to mostly the balancing. The yin yang is a pretty good symbol. I didn't see it, but the balancing of my breath, the in and out. And I'm more of a belly breather, in and then out. I seem to have a little difficulty, pushing it out through the chest. I can bring it all the way up to the chest, but then I have trouble. And so I just recognize that. And I could get through about 10 what I call even breaths. And then I have to take a deep breath and blow it out. I mean, and that's just,
So
that's just.
that's what you note. You note even deep. Perfect.
Right.
What you described, don't think of it as a problem. Think of it as, well, that's what I, this is what I do, this is how I breathe, and I note. But be careful not to try and make your breath be a certain way. Unless it's something you really need to do for your specific physical condition. It's not like we're trying to control the breath. We're
Right.
trying to pay attention to the breath, which is a very different thing.
Right. And I've had to work with that
Yeah.
over time. And I also I had, several periods of noting things, and I felt like I caught it pretty quick to go back to the breath. And then I did have some periods of concentrating on noting when the breath was going to begin and when it was ending. I believe you said that's good for concentration.
Yeah, well, it's just that's like what I call aiming and sustaining, which are the first two steps. There's a thing called the teaching called the five steps of concentration, and those are the first of the five steps, first two. I
Okay.
won't say any more than that now. I might talk about that 6 weeks
Yeah.
from now or
But
something.
I had not ever been able until tonight, like I've heard that, but I haven't really been able to practice it. And so I
Oh.
practiced a little of that.
Yeah.
But then I would, go off and then I'd come back and say, hey, you're not practicing your concentration exercise anymore. You've gone into a different breath style.
And that's okay. As long as you
Yeah.
know, as long as you see that that's what's happened, that's skillful. It's like, as long as you see, oh, now I've got, then now my breath is like this. That's fine. It's
Okay.
not like we have to have, we're not trying to make the breath be a certain way. We have to essentially give up the idea that we're supposed to be in control, even of our breath.
Okay.
Yeah,
Thank you. Thanks,
that's a
Bear.
tough one.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else move to speak? I have a homework assignment I have to give you yet, so. You didn't know that. This is a course, you're going to get homework every week. So here's the homework assignment. Number one, as best you can, try and practice every day. Daily practice is a really strong way to build up your practice and get in the rhythm of practice as part of your life, as opposed to, oh, I go to hang out with this guy on Thursday night and we do some breathing stuff, and then the rest of the week, who knows what's happening. If you best you can, try and find a time every day in the same time and the same physical space and practice. And it might be, 30 minutes might have been way too long for some of you, so do 15 minutes. It doesn't make any difference the length of the time. Find a time that works for you and then try and do it every day. But remember what I said about starting again. Starting again is both at the breath level in that cycle. It's also like you're going to have a day, who knows, you're not feeling well, something happens at work and you got to go in early, your kids are sick, I mean, who knows, your dog is sick, all kinds of stuff happen, right? And you're not going to be able to practice that day. Don't beat yourself up. Don't say, oh, well, I didn't practice today, that's it. And there goes my daily practice. Just start again the next day. It's all you can ever do. I can't tell you, if I had a dollar for every time I had to start again, man, I'd be rich. So over the years, so it's okay to keep starting again. The other thing I want to suggest is that part of this practice is that we want to be able to do what we just did: sit together, sit on yourself with yourself, and do a formal practice. But also see if you can take this practice of pay attention to the breath out into just your daily life. And the best way to do this is to have some cue that you says, oh, I should do just five mindful breaths. I'm just going to go note my breath for five breaths, in, out, five times. That's it. That's a very simple practice, like very short. And the cue could be anything. I think in today's modern world, the best one I can imagine is I pick up my phone and I'm about to do something with my phone. Then you just pause and take five breaths. And then do whatever you have to do. Because some people, you need your phone for all kinds of stuff. I'm a part-time chaplain at the hospital, and we use cell phones to communicate with each other in the hospital. Oh, can you go to room so and so? I can't get there right now. I'm, blah blah blah. And we text back and forth. It's like it's so. Those are really useful tools. It's just we have to be careful sometimes that we. I mean, maybe what's going to happen is you'll go to turn on your phone, and then you're going to take five mindful breaths, and then you're going to go, why am I bothering to do this? And you put your phone away, which would be a big gain as far as I'm concerned. Because often we pick it up just because we're distracted and we want to distract ourselves a bit more. It's a way to notice that just by. And it doesn't have to be that. It could be maybe you spend a lot of time in your car. Every time you come to a red light, you stop and you take 5 breaths. It's like, oh, or every time you do a lot of walking around in a building that has lots of doors, every time you open a door, doesn't matter what the cue is, just pick something that is a reminder to be mindful in this brief little way. And then the mindfulness keeps getting reconnected and reconnected and reconnected as the day goes on. Really important, skillful practice. So now I have to finish, and I always finish. People who know me know I'm a total poetry nut. So I want to read you a poem that reflects, in some sense, what I've been talking about, and then we'll do a formal closing. So this is Mary Oliver, one of my favorite poets. This is from a book called Evidence, and the poem is called Swans. And it's sort of, she's describing a moment of mindfulness in her daily life. They appeared over the dunes. They skimmed the trees and hurried on to the sea, or some lonely pond, or wherever it is that swans go. Urgent, immaculate, the heat of their eyes staring down and then away. The thick span of their wings as bright as snow, their shoulder power echoing inside my own body. How could I help but adore them? How could I help but wish that one of them might drop a white feather, that I should have something in my hand to tell me that they were real? Of course, this was foolish. What we love, shapely and pure, is not to be held, but to be believed in. And then they vanished into the unreachable distance. A wonderful description of a few moments of mindfulness, of really paying precise attention to something, in her sense, being able to express it in poetry. So the last thing we do is we do what's called the dedication of merit. The idea behind this is that whatever we've gained from being together and being in refuge together, practicing together, isn't ours. And we have to immediately give it away and put it out into the world and share the benefits of what we've experienced with everyone else who certainly needs it out there. It's very simple. May the beneficial energies arising from our practice here together today become the causes and conditions for the end of suffering and the awakening of all beings everywhere.